I want you to imagine a rather unpleasant scenario where you've worked really hard on a deal, and then the call comes in, or perhaps the email arrives, and you're told, in essence, thanks, but no thanks. What's your next move? How about the move after that? Well, the good news is, I got you covered today. I'm going to help you with that thought process because we're going to be talking all about a little something-something called When Prospects Say No. My name is Paul Castain, and I'm the author of the Your Sales Playbook blog and your host for the Sales Playbook podcast. I've personally trained over 10,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready because school is now in session. I'll tell you, it's kind of weird. When I got up this morning, I look at my phone. It's like a really bad habit that I have. I'm sure you guys, many of you have the same bad habit. You wake up in the morning, you're immediately looking at your phone and looking at your emails and all that kind of stuff. And I looked at the date on my phone, and I see that it's March 5th already. And I remember thinking, my God, like already the year is just like zipping by. In a few weeks from now, we're going to have the first quarter of 2017 behind us. So it really begs a question, and I want you to answer it honestly. Please don't answer it out loud. It's going to look real silly if you're sitting in your office and you're talking to your computer or, you know, like talking to your phone or like in the car or whatever it is. The car, not so much. Everybody talks to themselves in the car. People sing to themselves in the damn car. But the question is this, and it's a really simple one, but I want you to be honest with yourself. How is your year going? I mean, a few weeks ago, everybody was full of piss and vinegar, and this is going to be the best year ever, and all the rah-rah. And what about maybe the second, third week in January? It all disappears. I mean, those of you who know me, and you've had a look at me, you know I'm not a gym rat. I mean, I definitely have more than a few pounds that I could lose. So what I'm about to share with you is not from my experience. It's from two of my sons are gym rats, by the way. I mean, you know, like I'm thank God I was nice to them when they were younger, because these guys, like, seriously, man, they're pretty jacked, and they go to the gym all the time. And they were telling me when they were trying to, like, work out, like what time they were going to go to the gym and everything. I heard one of them say, no, we don't want to go during this time. This is when, you know, all those January people are going. And I asked them about, what do you mean? They go, oh, well, that happens every January. For the first few weeks of January, you have everybody with their New Year's resolutions and you can't get on any of the equipment and everything else. So, you know, I think they try to go during the day or something like that instead of the evening. And they said, right after that, it just falls off a cliff, man. It's like, everybody gives up on it. And what I'm hoping is, I'm hoping you didn't already give up on your goals for 2017. And I'm hoping that when I ask that question, how are things going for you, you were honest about it. And I think one of the toughest things for salespeople to admit, because you see, we have this ego. And I always talk about the ego in sales. The ego is actually a really, really good thing to have in sales, believe it or not. But it's also one of the most dangerous things too. So it's a good thing to have because it's our body armor. It protects us from a lot of the rejection, a lot of the, like, the dopey things that people say to us, right? I mean, you know, it's not an easy job that we have. Certainly, I think people misunderstand our role as salespeople. They think it's just all about going out to lunches and just racking up the expense account. We just count our money. But we know it's a lot more than that. So on one hand, it protects us from that. But the other side of it, it keeps us from acknowledging that we might need some help and we might need a little bit of guidance. So I have a free resource for you. And I offered it at the beginning of the year. At the beginning of the year, you might have been thinking, I got it covered, Uncle Paul. But don't we all know a little something that says that things change, right? And things might have changed for you. So I have a free coaching guide that I put together. And if you ever thought about, well, maybe I might hire a sales coach, maybe I won't, this will help you. It'll give you all the questions you need to be asking, the things that you need to be thinking about. Because if you've ever checked into getting a sales coach, you'll find that there is actually way too many choices for you to choose from. So really, you know, who's going to be the best choice for you? So I give you a thought process. I give you the exact questions. I give you the things to look at as far as their background so that you make the right choice. So if you'd like to snag a free copy of my How to Hire a Sales Coach guide, if you go to yoursalesplaybook.com/coaching, yoursalesplaybook.com/coaching, you can download your own copy, okay? So let's get down to business now. So today we're talking about just the words that none of us really like to hear in sales, and yet it's part of our reality. It's when people reject us and people tell us, hey, thanks, but no thanks. And just so that we're learning, all of us are learning from the same perspective, I just want to make sure that you understand what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about you cold calling a place or even warm calling a place and they say, oh, thanks, but we're all set. I'm not talking about that kind of a no. I'm talking about one where you have an actual prospect. You've met with them. You've done a needs analysis. You've presented some viable solutions to them. And then they either call you up and say, in essence, thanks, but no thanks, or they shoot you an email. So the very first thing that we're going to talk about, and actually throughout this entire podcast today, is a process that I've taught many times on all my webinars and in my coaching practice and on this podcast too. And I call it communication mapping. So let's define communication mapping and how it relates to rejection and even how it relates to other parts of the sales process. So communication mapping is when we think out in advance, number one, what our message is going to be, because there are all different types of messages. And many of you know one of my biggest pet peeves is when we just keep clinging to the same message, like I'm calling to check in, or following up, I'm circling back, and it's the same thing. And, you know, it becomes very boring after a while, and it's really the lowest value message that you could probably deliver. So, but there's all different types of messages that we could be delivering. So the first part of it is, what's the message that we want to get out there? The second part is, what venue are we going to use to deliver that message? In other words, am I going to call you and deliver that? Am I going to shoot you an email? Am I going to message you through LinkedIn? Am I going to do something creative? Am I going to include some kind of content to maybe demonstrate my expertise to you? I mean, there's all different things. Am I going to perhaps utilize someone that's worked with me before and help me to have more of a warm introduction to you? Or if we're in the process where you're evaluating, hey, maybe I should hire Paul Castain, do I want to utilize someone who is working with me currently to help provide maybe as a form of evidence to and a testimonial to my products and services? So there's all different ways and all different venues to deliver the message. So first we had the message that we want to deliver. And hopefully it's not circling back or checking in or even the message of, hey, I want to sell you something. Like, we can't always cling to that. We got to mix it up. It's a courtship. We can't have the same shitty date over and over again. And then we talk about, well, how do I want to deliver that, right? What venue am I going to use? And then last but not least, we decide on really how much time between those attempts to communicate are we going to have. So maybe just like a very quick overview, it might be something if I'm approaching you for the first time. Maybe what I do is I send an email to you. And at the end of the email, I say, you know what, I'm actually going to be calling you at such and such a day, such and such a time. So touch number one or attempt number one would be that email. Attempt number two would be when I call you. Now, you know, I've got to also think that, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm crazy, but there's this thing called voicemail. And I might get your voicemail. So what is my message going to sound like and what's my move after that? So with communication mapping, we're not thinking 20,000 moves into the future. We're not thinking about the next, I always say the next 18 months into the future, like a full-fledged marketing person is really supposed to do. We're salespeople. So what we want to do is really get our brain around three moves at a time that we've thought out, premeditated. So very quickly on this communication mapping thing, and then I'm going to bring it right into the podcast today, because what I really want you to do, instead of just glossing over this communication mapping thing, is give you something that is more universal instead of something that you could just use when somebody tells you no. I want you to leave this podcast and be able to use it in a number of places. So a lot of scenarios where we could use communication mapping, we can certainly use it when we're approaching a potential client. We can use it after a potential client has approached you. In other words, they've inquired about your services, right? Perhaps, you know, it's a lead that was generated. How about after a networking event or after you've connected with someone on LinkedIn? Will you plan what that, like, what are we going to do once we connect on LinkedIn, right? A lot of people don't think about that. And that's why a lot of us haven't interacted with our network and becomes useless at that point. So today, we're going to really talk about more of a specific scenario. And it's when, God forbid, a prospect tells you no. So my first question for you, and I'm hoping that you're, like, if you're driving in the car, maybe you can pull over and you could really work through this. And if you're not, it's not a problem, but I really think you should come back to the podcast after you've listened to it, and when it's safer for you, when you're not in the car, to sit down and actually do some of these things that we're going to talk about. So the very first question I have for you is, I really want you to think about, what do you typically do when someone tells you no? What do you do? I mean, what is your move? What do you say? Is there a specific thing that you typically respond with? Are there some tactics that you use? I want you to think about that. Now, if you want to take it a step further, to me, I'm really, really passionate about not having a shitty internal sales meeting. Most of them are horrible. And, you know, it's this whole 45 minute to 60 minute thing of a sales manager going around and asking everybody for their projections and their numbers and administrative things that could have just been like sent in an email, and it's a big waste of time. To me, this is a great topic for a sales meeting. Simply asking everybody, okay, somebody tells you no, take us through your process, and have everybody like bring their process there and be prepared to give everyone there a quick 30 to 45 seconds, certainly no more than a minute overview of what you do. That's the first thing. But for now, what do you typically do? Now, the next thing that I want you to do is I want you to think about what you could be doing differently, because that's really what sales is all about. And that's what being a humble student of sales is all about. Looking at it differently and saying, okay, in what ways? In fact, that's another thing I just want you to jot down. I'm sorry. I just want to really make sure that you walk away with some evergreen types of tips and universal tips that could be used in a variety of scenarios, not just when somebody tells you no. So what I want you to do is know that one of the best brainstorming questions that you could ask in your team meeting or of yourself, just to get your brain wrapped around a challenge or whatever, it's a fill-in-the-blank question that we're about to use, and it goes something like this: in what ways can I? And then you fill in the blank. In what ways can I? So right now in this context, I want you to ask yourself the following question. In what ways can I create a communication map from the moment somebody tells me no? In what ways can I create a communication map from the moment somebody tells me no? So one thing I just want to get out in the open, and you can feel free to say duh, and I think you know this about me by now, and if not, well, you're about to be told. I'm never going to tell you something because I need to fill up time on a podcast. I mean, seriously. So if I'm telling you it, it might mean that, I don't know, somewhere in the right now we're probably up to about 14 or 15,000 sales reps that I've trained. I've seen this numerous times. So I don't ever want you to think I'm just putting something out there that's the equivalent of me telling you, okay, don't forget to tie your shoes, and, you know, okay, be careful when you're driving, and there's the big advice for today. No, I'm telling you it because I've seen it too many times played out the other way. So obviously, when somebody's telling you no, you need to get that onto either a phone call or a face-to-face meeting as quickly as possible. The knee-jerk reaction to an email that's sent to you where you're rejected and told no and thanks but no thanks might be to respond with an email. I think the very best thing that you could be doing, again, feels free to say duh, but again, there's a reflex, there's your ego at play, there's the holy shit aspect, I just lost the deal. I mean, there's a lot of variables in play here. Get it onto a phone call or a face-to-face. Next, here are a few ideas for you to create your own communication map. So hopefully, you took a few minutes, I'm hoping that you did, and you thought about, A, what you typically do. Next, what you could be doing differently in terms of a communication plan from the moment somebody tells you no. And by the way, nobody ever likes to think about that. It's almost like on the phone, we never want to think about objections. But, I mean, it's probable. It's inevitable. Same thing here. I don't care how good you are. People are going to tell you no. They already have. So you have to be prepared for that. You have to think about the kind of stuff that makes you uncomfortable. Because I promise you, when it makes you uncomfortable, it's making your competitors uncomfortable. But you got to be the one who's got, like, you know, like the balls of steel and who's willing to think it through and go into those uncomfortable types of thought process. So here are a few ideas. So the very first thing, and speaking of like balls of steel, this one, you know, for some of you is going to take that. Just that type of balls of steel mentality. When somebody tells you no, you absolutely have to ask them why. And I'm going to say a few things. Some of you won't ask why. Because, and I've asked this of people, can I ask you why you're not asking why? And really, there's all different types of answers, but here's the gist of it. I don't want it to get weird, or I feel kind of funny doing that or whatever. Now, forgive me for being an ass here, but you deserve an explanation. And there's a lot of people in sales saying, you know, the prospect doesn't owe you anything. Well, I do think they owe you something. I absolutely do. I don't care if you contacted them or if you begged them to get in there. They still owe you something if you took your time to sit there and evaluate their needs and explain the program and work up a proposal and tie up your resources to get information to them and crunch numbers, answer all their questions, help them do their due diligence. Perhaps you even took it a step further and educated them on how to really buy your product or service properly, and you made them a little bit smarter in the process. All you're asking for is a reason why. So I absolutely do believe that you're entitled to that. And I absolutely do believe that it's your right to ask for that. I don't think you should ever feel funny about that. So again, when you're asking that why, don't do that through an email. That should be like they need to hear your voice and tonality so that they don't like read something else into it, right? I mean, is it possible that people can be misunderstood? I mean, it happens all the time, right? So when you're asking them why, in fact, let me tell you the why behind the why. Like, why are you asking them why? You know, up until now, I kind of told you, okay, well, you're entitled to it and everything else. But no, there are reasons why you need that why. And the first one is, and this one can happen a lot, especially in the world that we're living in now, where people are so damn distracted and business is moving at the speed of light. Is it possible that someone made a misinformed decision, that they made the wrong decision, that they kind of harped on something like they thought they understood about you and your company and they're wrong, and maybe they misunderstood you? Is that possible? I mean, you know, I mean, it can happen all the time. I mean, have you ever known someone that they harped on one thing that you said like 3 years ago and they just never let you live it down. And you're like, dude, there's like, you know, so much more than that one thing. And P.S., you didn't even understand me, right? I actually used to work with a guy like that. And I was thinking about him. Sorry to digress, but I was thinking about him before I did this podcast today. And the funniest thing about this guy, I know I've spoken about this guy in the past. He was this Frenchman that I worked for years ago. No offense to our French listeners, but this Frenchman was hysterical because I think someone thought it would be a cruel joke to teach him English, but more specifically curse words, English curse words, improperly. So I'll never forget the first time, the first of many times, he called me and this other sales rep on the carpet. And I have to tell you, you know, especially in my younger days, I was this like young gun, very, very cocky, and, you know, brought in just a lot of business. So I just was very, very arrogant about it. And he called me in there and this other rep, and he was yelling at us, and he was attempting to curse at us using the F word of all. And you guys know how I am about bad language, right? I mean, very offended. Actually was the opposite of offended, because I'm not going to say the way the word is supposed to be pronounced, but I think you'll understand. But he was attempting to use the F curse, yelling at us. And he said, you know, you funkin' guys, like, you know, the F curse now had an NC in it, you funkin' guys. And I laughed at him. I've always been like horrible throughout my whole life. I've been thrown out of classes, even at the college level, because I just couldn't stop laughing at funny shit. And that, you know, it's just a bad time to laugh at your boss anytime. But when they're yelling at you, just for all you youngins listening, you usually don't want to laugh at someone who has authority over you and higher on the food chain and owns the business and signs your paychecks when they're yelling at you, particularly when they use the F curse. Unless you're in the scenario like I was, where I was helping to support his business because I was bringing in a lot of business. So, you know, he needed to get over it. It was his problem. I mean, he was the idiot saying the F curse. I mean, I couldn't imagine yelling at somebody and mispronouncing the F curse. I've been around it my whole life. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I think maybe he was doing it for shock value. Who knows? Anyway, but I see we learned lots of things on this podcast. This week, it was not to say funkin'. Maybe you guys should try it. I don't know. Maybe you close more business. But if it backfires, I'm deleting this. I'm in enough trouble with all of your HR departments. But anyway, getting back to the whole point, I think depending on the response that you get, not from saying the F curse improperly, but from asking why, I think from there, that tells you where you go. It might mean that you need to ask more questions. It means that you might have to take them through the specifics of your program and your solution again. But, you know, there are three quick questions that will help guide the types of questions that you should be asking when somebody has already told you no, and you're just trying to get clarification. So, and again, you could ask these any which way you want. I'm just going to give you the core of the question. Number one, you really want to find out what they didn't like about what you presented to them. And the reason why you're going to ask that is because they might have misunderstood something. Again, they have to take in all this information from so many different vendors and potential vendors, and it's possible after a while everybody starts sounding the same. And think about it from your perspective. Have you ever been in a buying situation? Maybe you had contractors come by your house or whatever, and you're hearing everybody and listening to them, and you're at this point where your brain is ready to explode because everybody is sounding the same. And you don't remember, was it Paul that said this? Was it Jack that said that? Was it the ABC company? Whatever. You know, it just gets very confusing. So you want to, when you're trying to find out the why, find out what they didn't like about things. That's number one. Number two, I think it's important to find out what they actually liked. Not just to hear them say it, but it can help rebuild momentum in that conversation. And almost like when you're negotiating with people, they always say kind of go back on something that you did agree on, right? And establishing that, then helps you to go forward from a position of strength. But it's important to find out the things that they liked also, because sometimes it could be a matter that you can provide more of the things that they liked, and it might overshadow what they didn't like. Also, when they hear themselves talking about the things they liked, it could change their whole psychological, you know, state that they're in, because they're talking now about positive things. But also, I think the last thing, and you could find your own way of wording this, is find out what we didn't offer you that you wished we did. What didn't we offer you that you wished that we did offer you? That's another scenario where people might have misunderstood you. And it might be just as simple as saying, when they get done and you hear them out saying, actually, with all due respect, we were offering that. And let me explain where, let me explain how. And you know, my deepest apologies for you not getting it, jackass. No, I'm kidding. My deepest apologies for not explaining that thoroughly the first time. I'm so sorry about that. Let me take you through it again. So it gives you the opportunity to not be in the scenario where it's like, so it is written, so it is done, you are damned now because I've told you no. No, we want to get them talking about it. But now, that's the first thing I told you about. You want to ask why. It needs to be verbally. Don't do this through an email. Have the conversation with them. I told you this, like, three questions in there that you want to ask: what they didn't like, what they liked. And the third one is, what didn't we offer you that you wish that we had offered you? The second one is a really difficult why that you have to ask. I always refer to these things as the two whys. The first one you ask of your former prospect. The second why is more difficult. You're going to ask it of yourself. And in order to do it, you really have to ask your ego to leave the room. You have to be willing to take your medicine here as well. And you really need to start from the beginning, the very beginning, from the moment you approach them, and kind of run the mental game tape over and over and over again. And look at what could you have done differently? What could you have done better? And think about it right from the start. It might be the moment that you set that appointment. Did you get the right players in the room? When you got in the room, so to speak, and you had that meeting, did you take control? Did you take too much control? Did you get the right selling environment? That's so important. And one where you're able to ask questions, they're able to ask questions. You're able to present your solutions. You're able to facilitate a good conversation with the right people there, access to the people, you know, who would be stakeholders in your solution. But I can go on and on and on. I mean, look at the quality of the questions you were asking. And then ask yourself, what could I have done better? Now, there is something that I learned when I worked for Dale Carnegie many years ago. And it was very interesting, and I want to share it with you. And, you know, I think Dale Carnegie had said this, but I had heard a lot of people talk about this. And, you know, the idea is that there are three presentations, and you should know the three presentations. You ready? The first presentation is the one that you planned on giving when you got together with your prospect. It could be the overall presentation. Again, like we just talked about before, from the moment you said hello and taking control and asking questions and creating a nice free flow of information and following up, all that stuff. And it could even be maybe that meeting that all of a sudden you were told, thanks, but no thanks. So it's the meeting you planned on having. But then the second presentation is the meeting that you actually did have. For whatever reason, it evolved into a different meeting. That happens all the time, right? We prepare, but people start asking questions, or maybe they obsess on one point. Maybe you obsess on one point. Maybe another player walks in the room and now takes it down a different road. Maybe they were tangents. Who knows? So the second presentation is the one that you actually had. The third presentation is the most important one in a way. And it's the one, when all is said and done and the smoke clears, it's the one that you wish that you actually had, the one that you wish that you had had. So the first presentation, the one you plan on having. The second one, the one that you actually have. And the third one is, you know, the one that you wished in retrospect. You know, hindsight is 20/20. Looking back on it, I really wished that I had this presentation. I really wished when I got together with Joni last week that I had asked better questions. I really wished that when I got together with Todd 2 weeks ago, that when I presented Castain Training Systems, that we talked more about the one-on-one coaching, because that's really what he was getting at. And I really didn't, you know, talk about that enough. Or maybe looking back on that deal, I really wished that I provided them with more evidence. Instead of me just talking about all the awesome things about Castain Training Systems, I really wished that I had shared some customer testimonials with them or talked about some statistics and how we rank versus, you know, our peers and things like that. I wish I had done that. That, to me, is the most important presentation. In fact, I would make that a habit after every appointment that you have, that you kind of go through those three presentations. Okay, I kind of planned to have this one. Should I have planned differently? Because we actually had this presentation or this actual conversation or this needs analysis or this phone call or conference call. But, you know, now that all is said and done and I can look back with 2020 vision, I really wish that I had had the following one. This is the one that I think if I had had that one, I would have walked away with the deal. So I want you to think about that. The final part of this whole process that I'm teaching you, and I'm saying it's the final part. It's not. This is just a few of these ideas. There's so much more to the communication mapping, and I'm going to get into that in a minute. But for now, the most important thing, and this is the one that you really have to pull the car over, because if you don't take anything else away from today's episode, this is the one that is going to change the trajectory of every rejection that you ever get from this point on. You have to make sure that you don't let things get weird from the moment they tell you no. It is your job now. Your role now has changed. The minute you get a no, your number one responsibility is to make sure that interactions from that point on don't get weird. In fact, I'll go on to say that it's the weird that makes the no final. It's the weird that makes the no final. It keeps them from taking your calls. It, you know, and many, there's many people who feel that once they tell you no, that's it. They severed ties only because it would feel weird stringing you along. It would feel weird giving you false hope. It would be weird talking with someone that they basically said get lost and they're giving the money to a competitor. But it doesn't have to be that way. So you have to make sure it doesn't get weird. So a few ideas to help you to keep things from getting weird after you're told get lost, after you're told no thanks. The first thing is, you ready? Don't punish them for being honest with you. I told you one of the things we want to do is we want to find out why. Why can be a conversation. It doesn't have to be a debate. Don't make it a debate. The debate is going to make it weird. So, you know, what could happen is if you ask them why, next thing you know, you start getting defensive or you get argumentative or combative. You've basically conditioned them, A, probably never to take your call again, just so you know. But B, never to be honest with you again. It's probably just easier to give you some, you know, bullshit line like, yeah, we're moving in another direction. See, that doesn't really tell you anything. But you've basically punished them. If you're going to get argumentative and you're going to really push back on them. And I just want to explain something to you. You might not think that you're being argumentative, but there's a good chance that you are. And you don't mean to do that. You don't have a list of things to do today. Be a real dick to that person who told me no. I don't think that's your objective. I think that what happens with many of us is that we really believe in our product and service, and we cannot comprehend when someone makes a decision with one of our competitors, especially. And I'm going to be a little arrogant here, and I hope that you get a little arrogant too, especially when we know they made the wrong choice. So, but we can't let that all come out. We've got to really channel it properly. So the first thing is, don't punish them for being honest with you. Next, you want to make sure that you leave the door open and stroke their ego. Let me say it again. Leave the door open and stroke their ego. So let's talk about stroking their ego first. Part of the reason why people might feel uncomfortable contacting you again after they told you no is that, not that you said this to them, but they don't want to feel like there's this aura of, I told you so, or I knew you'd be back, right? So what I always recognize is that the people at the decision-making level have somewhat of an ego, right? I mean, is that a safe assumption? I think even the higher up you go in an organization, at the C level, you've got some tremendous egos at play there. Now, look what happens. We put them in a room with someone who also has a tremendous ego. Oh, I don't know. I think they call us salespeople, right? Yeah, we don't have egos, right? Now, look at that clash right there. So what we want to do is do something that most people aren't going to do. And it's to demonstrate a little bit of grace and a little bit of humility and stroke their ego. And there's all different ways that you can do this. So one of the things that I recommend that you do is you might even say, hey, listen, if you ever get to the point that you're second guessing your decision, or you realize that the grass wasn't greener, or, you know, sticking with the status quo and what you guys have been doing really wasn't the best way to go, man, you'd absolutely make my day if you gave me a call, because I got to tell you, and sometimes I'll do this with local companies. I'll say, because I pass your business like a few times a week, and every time I'm going to be passing that business, I'm going to be like, damn, man, I really wish I was doing business with them. Or, you know, that's where Paul works, and he's such a nice guy, or whatever it is. But I do something like that, and I say it a lot better than I just said it now. I do something to let them know that I really wanted their business without sitting there and crying and begging for, you know, the job. But I want to do that to just show them that I'm not some pompous shithead that's going to say, ah, I knew you'd be back. You know, I'm the best trainer. I mean, yeah, it's just I don't want that. Nor do I want that anywhere in their thought process or whatever. So what I'll do is, again, I'm just going to just be very, like, just laid back about it. But what I also do is I say, hey, in the meantime, and I call this resource positioning. What I'll say is, hey, in the meantime, I want you to consider me a resource. I know you decided to go with the ABC company, but please, you know, we've come this far together. If there are any questions that you ever have, I mean, I would absolutely be offended if you didn't reach out to me. I mean, I love what I do. I love helping people just like you. And I'm really about building long-term relationships. And what better way for me to prove it to you than after you just told me no, right? So please, allow me to be your first call if you ever have any questions and you're just not getting anywhere or whatever, right? So that's, again, notice what I'm doing. I'm trying to leave the door open. I'm trying to keep it from getting weird. And the final thing for now, because there's actually a lot more things that you can be doing, but for now, I do something that I can tell you nobody on the planet does. Thank them. Send them a thank you card. Because, first of all, we know that a lot of people, when we dispense the advice, hey, you should be sending thank you cards, a lot of people are going to say, I know. But the average person really knows, but they're not doing, right? I mean, let's all be honest. Like, you know, I'm going to kind of have to, like out everybody on that one. You know, I've even done it in the past. Yeah, I know that. Yeah, but I haven't done it in 2 years. So, like, the thank you on that end is just like hardly ever happens. Like when somebody grants you an appointment and they're considering you, it hardly ever happens on that level. But imagine after somebody tells you, no, I'm going with your competitor. Thanks, but no thanks. I'm going with your competitor, Castaigne. You're a nice guy. It's not you, it's me. You know, like that kind of thing. How many people are going to send them a thank you card after that? Not many, but I will. And it's all part of my mission to keep things from getting weird. I want to show them that I'm a good sport about it. I also think it's a way to demonstrate my character. And what better way to demonstrate character than when somebody basically has told you no. Very, very quickly, you know, and I could tell you lots of stories of this. I should have told you this before. But I can't tell you how many deals I've won back. First of all, just asking why, because people just misunderstood something. And I got another chance to go back around, ask more questions, re-explain something, lay out the differences better, and I won the deal that way. I can't even begin to tell you how many deals that I've won by keeping things from getting weird, specifically saying to people, you know, like using that resource positioning tactic where I say, you know, consider me a resource. Please call me. And people have said to me, almost word for word, we want to actually come back to you and have you be the training company for us. And the reason why is for the last 3 years you kept in touch with us. After we basically told you we were going with your competitor, you were never pushy. You were always helpful. I came to you on more than one occasion. I had questions. You never told me, why don't you just go to that training company that, you know, you ditched me for, right? You never did that. And we thought that if this guy is willing to be this helpful and this friendly to us after we told him no, what would happen once we had him on the payroll? And that's almost word for word what I've been told. So, and it cost me really nothing to do that, just so you know. So that's what I would do. So what I want to leave off with is really this concept that there's actually a lot more to this. And there's a lot more to making sure that you're the one getting the yes to begin with, right? I mean, today we talked about what do you do when you're told no, but there's a lot more to it with that communication plan, but there's a lot more to making sure that you're the one getting the yes instead of your competition. So if you found value in this today, I want to let you know that we're going to be talking all about this. I'm actually going to be sharing over 25 tips and tactics during our webinar this week, and it's called How to Close More Deals. Let me say it again. It's called How to Close More Deals. It all takes place this Thursday, March 9th, at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Now, right about now, you might be thinking, Castain, I got a thing, wish you would have told me, can't make it. Or, you know, maybe you always are busy at that time. Well, I got you covered. Sign up anyway. Not to support the Uncle Paul Foundation, but because if you sign up anyway, we'll send you the replay of the webinar later that afternoon on the 9th. I mean, how cool is that? And you can listen to it and view it as if you were like right there anytime over the next 60 days. And I go a step further with all of my webinars. I do this, by the way. I don't care if you attend live or if you want to check out the replay. I'm available to you to answer any of your questions. So 30 days from now, you decide to get around to this and you go, oh man, I wish I caught this live. I got a question for Uncle Paul. You can shoot me an email. It's that simple. So if you'd like to learn more, my advice is you got to move kind of quickly, because if you're like me, procrastination is a real bitch, right? Like right now you might be saying, but I really like this topic that Paul, you know, was covering today. I really like this idea of this webinar that he's doing. And then all of a sudden, a million other things take your attention. So my advice to you, if you want to learn more about this, do it like right now. Be decisive. Go to yoursalesplaybook.com/close. More. Let me say it again. YourSalesPlaybook.com/close more. And on that note, I'm Paul Castain from YourSalesPlaybook.com. I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them. The Sales Playbook Podcast is a Castain Training Systems production. Come visit us at www.YourSalesPlaybook.com.